So here we are, Diana.
It's Hi, Guy.
just to set the scene, we are in the library of my office, which is a room which doesn't have a telephone, it doesn't have a computer, although it does have Wi-Fi, and it does have a Sonos speaker, and it doubles up as my nap room, and they're about... What would you estimate the number of books here, Diana?
I'm impressed. I love the fact that there are so many books.
So, Diana, we will get into some of the topics that I know that you want to discuss, but I want you to tell me a little bit about what it's like to watch somebody like Guy Speer go from being completely ignorant about the things that you're so knowledgeable about to learning a little bit more about those things. And in the process, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, this fits very nicely together because you've known me for about almost 20 years now. I don't know exactly how many, but for a long time. And that is precisely the time I have spent studying people's emotions and the human mind. And because we get along great, we always talk about the things we are excited about, including the stuff I've been studying. So along the way, you were this fantastic person who would read all the books I'd recommend and go to the therapist I'd recommend.
So, but at the time, you were doing a PhD at Long Island University.
Stony Brook University
Stony Brook
in Long
University.
Island, yes.
And then you studied with Diana Fosher, mm-hmm. who's done AEDP. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can tell a little bit more about the number of people that you've studied with and the kinds of therapy that you learned about and understood. Sue Johnson in Ottawa was another mm-hmm. person that you explained a lot to me about. Mm-hmm. And then John Gottman was another one.
Yes.
And you got me into Dan Siegel and The Developing Mind.
Yes.
And... Tell me about some more of the people that you've taught me about, but also the people that you've learned from the most.
Peter Levine, Eugene Gendlin, I would add to that list. But you've mentioned a lot of the people who've influenced me. Lee McCullough from Harvard University. Maybe to summarize or give some understanding, I studied the emotional patterning of the mind when I was doing my PhD, including the transmission of certain emotional imprints across generations. So how do we pass on certain of our patterns to our children and across generation, across relationships? And then I studied, once I had that theoretical framework of this research, how do you change it? If you don't like the way your mind and your unconscious mind are structured and imprinted based on your experiences and the people you've been exposed to.
So the listeners should know that I wrote about you in my book mm-hmm. and that I would not have written the same book. It would have been a very different book if I had not met you. And I'm just going to use a specific example for you to speak to. So I learned that when I was at D.H. Blair, which I write about in the book, mm-hmm. I was in a state of learned helplessness. Mm-hmm. What I don't write about in the book is that I'd had very difficult experiences in a boarding school where I couldn't leave. But then those experiences were transferred such that when I was at D.H. Blair, because there were some elements of the environment that were the same, I felt like I couldn't leave D.H. Blair when actually I could. And this was around the time that I met you, and I started getting an understanding of how I was actually reliving an old script, even though the script was not valid. And I think that you helped me a lot, actually, to see that I could free myself from that script by talking to me about Tony Robbins. So for those of you who've read my book, when I talk about, in the English version, a European couple, that I was very impressed with because they both had PhDs and they were Europeans and they were intellectuals. Diana was one of the people in that couple, and she's the person who told me to go and do the Tony Robbins seminar. I'll never forget you saying, "You should go do it, Guy. It'll change your life." But so maybe you can tell, because many of the people listening to this will have read my book, maybe you can just give it a little bit from your perspective of what you saw in me and maybe bring some of your ideas in. Related to me and the person I was then and what you saw me change into, who was able to, for example, get the hell out of D.H. Blair, for example.
Well, one of the things I admire about you so much, Guy, is that you are such a keen learner. You just love to learn, which anybody who could see this room now would look at all these books and would get that in a moment. But people who know you, you're just always curious and you always want to learn and get to the bottom of things. And I think when you have that attribute, you also have a second attribute, which is openness. You are, in a way, open to work on yourself, to change, to grow, to try things out, even if it's not perfect. And that those two, the humility to be open to learn and the curiosity and interest in constantly learning and growing, are very powerful two forces, because it means that you can constantly improve yourself, constantly learn, constantly reflect on what's holding you back, what's causing trouble, which is really what I think has made you grow so much over the years.
So that's really kind, Diana. What Diana's not sharing is that she was able to get me. And there weren't formal therapy sessions, although I was at the same time going to therapy sessions, but she enabled me to redirect my intellect away from solving spreadsheets and the kinds of hard problems, so-called hard problems, that I'd learned to solve at business school and at university, and to redirect my energy and my attention inwards to understand what my emotions were doing, which I had no clue about. So I still don't have much of a clue, just ask my wife, Diana. But so that's a nice introduction to Diana. And what I tell you is that Diana has a great website. She's got a talk that she did at TEDx Thessaloniki, which has a very large number of views. It's very, very worth watching as an introduction to Diana. So you can Google her and you can Google the talk. What I'm now going to do is pause, and then we're going to come back for a part B, which is going to be where I delve specifically into Diana's knowledge. I hope that you now have sufficient, your digestive juices are all going, so that you can absorb and take in some of the rich experience and knowledge that Diana has, especially for those of us who are a little more emotionally stunted. So see you in a minute. So, welcome back to part two. And I really am rather sorry that I switched the recorder off, because I was just telling Diana that I think that this is such a wonderful medium. The podcasting medium is so wonderful because, in a certain way, we have people with us who are on their daily commute to work. They take us jogging with them. They're in the car driving, or it's just a special moment, and it's a very, very personal, intimate, warm way to share experiences. So, and then Diana did a belly laugh, which was just so worth it, but we missed it. Maybe if I do well, we'll get it back. We'll see. So I'm going to go straight into what I know that Diana really wants to tell me and you, the listener. And so, Diana, you were saying that you're working on something called the emotional laws and how it might be relevant to investors and other listeners of the podcast. So just dive in.
Okay, Guy. So the emotional laws is my latest attempt to summarize some of the stuff I've learned over 20 years. What I have found over the years is, because my research on couples and on emotional patterns and how it affects children is quite interesting, and some of my work with clients, you know, as a therapist and as an executive coach, is the type of information that naturally people want to know about when I'm in a social group or in a social setting. And I find that people end up like interviewing me about it, even to the point where...
Kind of like this, really.
Yes, but this happens a lot. And then people keep saying, you know, oh, I want to learn about this. So the emotional laws is, we learn in school about the laws of physics or the laws of chemistry, but we never really, or how many of you have learned about the emotional laws? And yet the world of emotion has a lot to do with our happiness, with our interpersonal relationships, and yet we never get a guide to it. So as I was learning about so much about the mind and psychology, I always thought, why isn't there a guide, but not some kind of theoretical treaty, but a user's manual for how the mind works? And that's what I'm working on.
Yeah.
So I call it The Emotional Laws, A Guide to Your Own Mind.
Okay. Well,
So you're asking me how this may be relevant to investors?
Well, why don't you tell me about what? Can you give me an example of one of those laws? So what would an example of one of those laws be, very specifically?
I think I would like to answer it differently. I'd like to explain to you how it works. Okay.
So tell me how it works.
Because I'm still working out what I'm making into a law and what I'm making into a derivative of a law and how I'm structuring it. So I'm still playing around with that. But I can tell you what I already know based on how far I've progressed. So there's a theoretical portion that explains the laws. And then there are short films that are actually real life stories that illustrate these laws. And sometimes it can be quite humorous because our mind sometimes is not so rational and sometimes it is. And the emotional laws have a logic that some people call the emotions are illogical or irrational. And I maintain they're not. They're just following a different logic than the rational mind. They're following an emotional logic. And sometimes it can be quite funny. So over the years, I have collected a lot of stories about that, and I'm making them into films to bring the whole thing to life, and then also exercises so people can work through their own stuff as they're learning about the emotional laws and actually apply it to their own mind.
So before I ask you about how this might be relevant to investors, can you give, I know that you can't give all of them, and I know that in many cases, the key is to sanitize the content so that it can't be traced back to any individuals. But can you tell a story about that illustrates one of these laws, what one of these videos will look like, and what the take-home value will be for somebody who watches one before we talk about how it's relevant to some investors?
Okay. So, for example, one storyline is an actual videotaped therapeutic work, piece of work I've done with someone. And I got the permission of this person to edit these videotaped therapy sessions into a version that could be used to train psychologists, because I used to train psychologists and psychiatrists in how to achieve rapid resolution of traumatic emotional memories and things like that, that imprint the human mind and their behavior and their personality. So I have this 35-minute film of a man that was unable to love, and that over the course of 8 sessions that we work, has several heart-opening experiences, and by the end of this work, he can love.
So this is fantastic. Now we're down to the meaty details. This was a man who was unable to love.
Yes.
Has anybody heard of that before? Did anybody hear that from their wives sometime recently, maybe, or not so recently? So this man comes to you, and the problem that he presents with is that he's unable to love.
Yes. So in the therapeutic sessions that we do that are on this film, and his identity is hidden, but still it's used for training people, we go back to some of the emotional moments in his life that caused him to close his heart and his heart has been kind of behind this wall ever since. And he kind of doesn't even know that. It's almost like a part of himself got lost there during some traumatic memories. And that part is like, you could imagine, like frozen. So we release that part so that his emotional part is back online. So, and he can, and he is able to love his children first and foremost, and then other people also.
So he presents unable to love.
Yes.
And he doesn't know why.
Yes.
And then how many sessions does it take before you have some kind of knowledge, common knowledge between you and him, of the traumatic event that closed off his ability to love?
He have no recollection. In fact, he maintained that nothing traumatic ever happened to him. I had a hunch based on his inability to love, because we close our hearts when we... you know, when we have certain experiences. But I didn't say that to him. It was just a hypothesis. And the proof is in the pudding. If we do the work and the situation changes, then we've proved the point. But the point is not whether there were some traumatic events or not. That's not the point. The point is, can we get him back to love?
So if I understand correctly, what you're telling me is that the therapeutic process that released him from this inability to love. So one point very important is that the model that you have of humans is that we're all born, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're all born with the capacity to love.
Yes.
But that, unfortunately for some of us, through no fault of our own, have events happen to us that close that off.
Yes.
But now, because I think that I'm familiar... or was very familiar, and probably many of the listeners are very familiar with the kind of therapy, which is talk therapy, where you reanalyze the events around the trauma again and again and again. And you analyze it from a kind of an intellectual neocortex type perspective. And can you give us a little bit of a sense of... exactly how do you address that trauma? What is it that happens that enables you? And I should tell the listener that I've seen Diana in action with me. I've seen her in action with me and my wife. And I've seen her talking about some of the therapeutic experiences that she's had. And I've absolutely no doubt that there's something that is almost sort of miraculous that happens. And I'm just hoping that you can describe it a little bit. In a certain way, it's really exciting. And I know that, and it's part of why I really wanted to record an interview with you, is that in a certain way, it's not just about healing our lives, although it's also about that. It's about having better children. It's about having better families. In a certain way, I think that what is in a certain way frustrating for you is that you feel, and you're probably right, that you have the keys to heal humanity. There aren't many problems that we see in the world that couldn't be healed by some of the things that you can see. And I guess we can't sort of do it in all its multicolored glory, but just to give a hint of how those transformations happen in your therapy sessions.
Okay, thank you. So we have different parts of the brain, and some parts are, I call them the rational system, and some parts I call them the emotional system, and they are different structures of the brain. So the rational system is the neocortex, and the emotional system is our limbic system. Now, when you only do intellectual talk therapy, you tend to reach the rational system.